What's up, everyone? This is Anthony Pompliano. Most of you know me as Pomp. You're listening to the Pomp Podcast, simply the best podcast out there. Now let's kick this thing off.
Bill Pulte is the leader of Pulte Capital. He's the inventor of Twitter philanthropy, and he's the author of a brand new ebook, The Home That Bill Pulte Built, which is a book all about his grandfather. I really enjoy talking to Bill. He's got great insights into everything from business, investing, and philanthropy, and I hope that you enjoy this conversation. But before we get into this episode, I want to quickly talk about our sponsors. Today's episode is brought to you by Mode. Mode allows you to buy, earn, and grow Bitcoin all in one app. Not only is it a secure app to buy and hold Bitcoin, Mode allows you to pay and receive up to 10% Bitcoin cash back from its growing list of online partner brands. Mode, the UK fintech app, is one of a kind. They're FCA registered and are listed on the LSE in the UK and the OTCQB in the US. They choose to hold Bitcoin on their balance sheet. They are piloting a Bitcoin payroll product to pay UK employees in Bitcoin. Mode is giving away one whole Bitcoin to one of their customers. All you have to do is set up an account with Mode to be in a chance of winning. That's it. The opportunity ends January 31st, 2022. Download Mode today on the App Store or the Google Play Store. It's only available in the UK, but if you're in the UK and you're not using Mode, you're wrong. Go download Mode today, where you can buy, earn, and grow Bitcoin. They're very Bitcoin friendly. They hold Bitcoin on the balance sheet, and they're paying their UK employees in Bitcoin as well. Go download Mode today. This episode is brought to you by CoinCloud. Did you know you can buy and sell crypto with cash? I want to introduce you to CoinCloud. They are more than just a Bitcoin ATM company. CoinCloud is the world's leading digital currency machine operator. They've been around since 2014 and have thousands of machines across the country. You can buy and sell Bitcoin, Dogecoin, Cardano, and over 30 other digital assets. No connecting bank accounts, no long waits. And if you have questions, you can speak to a live US-based customer support rep 24/7. I've had a lot of Bitcoin ATM companies reach out, but CoinCloud is the only team I found that does things right. They put together a special offer for listeners of this show. You can get $50 in free Bitcoin when you buy $200 or more at any CoinCloud machine and use promo code POMP. Find your local ATM at coin.cloud/pomp. Again, that's coin.cloud/pomp and use promo code POMP to get $50 of free Bitcoin when you buy $200 or more at any of their machines. Today's episode is brought to you by Fundrise. You all know I believe that the best investors both understand and seek out extreme asymmetry. Fundrise is here to help you do just that. It's the largest direct-to-investor real estate investment platform out there, giving you the opportunity to achieve upside of an asset class previously reserved for institutions and high-net-worth individuals. That's right. Fundrise is making high-end, private market real estate investing accessible to everyone via an easy-to-use automated platform. Its 1 million users already know that the investment with Fundrise is capable of producing strong appreciation returns and income generation while helping to stabilize a diversified portfolio. That's more important now than ever in our inflationary environment. See for yourself how over 190,000 other investors have built a better portfolio with private real estate. It takes just a few minutes to get started with as little as $10. Go to fundrise.com/pomp today, and for a limited time, you'll get $10 when you place your first investment. Again, that's fundrise.com/pomp. Go check it out, and when you make your first investment, they'll give you $10 on top of it. fundrise.com/pomp.
Anthony Pompliano runs Pomp Investments. All views of him and the guests on his podcast are solely their opinions and do not reflect the opinions of Pomp Investments. You should not treat any opinion expressed by Pomp or his guests as a specific inducement to make a particular investment or follow a particular strategy, but only as an expression of his personal opinion. This podcast is for informational purposes only.
We have a very, very special guest. We have Bill Pulte here with us today, all morning. He is, I think we should start calling this like a guest host. If you're going to be here all day, it's not a guest, it's a guest host. How are you?
Great. Pulte and Pomp.
Pulte, Pomp, Pomp Boys, yeah. Pulte. Pulte Homes. I mean, we got all kinds of stuff going on. Lots of peas going on. First, Bitcoin. Let's start there.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on Bitcoin right now? You smile as soon as I say Bitcoin. So what are you thinking?
How can you not smile when you hear Bitcoin? You know, I'm going to take a little bit of a different stance than probably you guys have. I think that, and I tweeted about this the other day, and the Bitcoin press was all like, oh, Twitter philanthropist thinks Bitcoin's going to crash. I didn't say that. But I do
correcting think, the record yeah. off the start. Yeah.
But I do think that it's going to be a little difficult in the coming 6 to 9 months, I think. I think we're at kind of, this is a little contrarian, but I think we're kind of at peak inflation. That's my view.
Okay. So when you think about, let's start first with Bitcoin and its relationship to inflation. Your thought process is as inflation goes up, more people are excited about Bitcoin. They look at it as an inflation hedge, and therefore there's a relationship between price should go up as inflation goes up.
Well, look, you know a lot more than me, and you guys know a lot more than me about this. But from my perspective, and don't get me wrong, I'm big on Bitcoin being a currency. I want it to be a currency. But I think right now it's a commodity. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I think that what we're seeing in some of these commodities and the fact that Bitcoin is down so much, and you're seeing just, it's like disinflation almost with some of these commodities. Oil's maybe an exception. But I think you're starting to see some, you know, not cratering, but some weakness in the commodities. And I think that that could potentially get to Bitcoin. Now, am I a buyer? Abso-effing-lutely. not now. But because I have a lot of Bitcoin. So it's kind of like, you know, okay, I'll wait for a little bit of softness and then I'll hit it hard again.
That's okay. So when you think about...
But obviously no one knows. I don't know.
Right? Yeah, so. Of course. When you think about things like El Salvador, let's start there. Like a country now, right? I think this is the last time we talked, is like pretty much plugging their entire country into Bitcoin. Some would say in an irresponsible way. Some would say in a very responsible way. Like, how does that change the viewpoint of maybe your peers or friends of yours in finance or investing? Do they now say like, oh, it's legit because there's a country doing this? Or do they look at them as the outlier and they're like, look, it's, you know, it's El Salvador. It's not the United States. It's not, you know, France or something like that.
Well, we could talk about my peers, people that you and I know and those type of things, but let's throw them out the window for purposes of this. Let's just look at third world countries and poverty and remittances and stuff like that. You know, one of the things El Salvador did is, you know, the president there is kind of flashy, right? And so, you know, he's able to get promotion. Well, what about all the third world country leaders who are not as flashy and not as savvy as the guy in El Salvador? And so I don't know if you saw yesterday, but Cash App is going to be doing Lightning, right? Mm-hmm. Which is your big deal. You know, Lightning on the Cash App, right? Free transactions.
Yeah, Cash App
Bitcoin.
Is integrating with the Lightning Network, yeah.
And then, you know, Cash App just did that deal, Affirm or whatever, which mm-hmm. I guess is, you know, expands their international reach. So you can envision a world where pretty quickly Square, I mean, just if you take that company in and of itself, they're going to be just unlocking Bitcoin to all of these countries everywhere.
Yeah.
And I just don't think that people fully understand that yet. I mean, I think the El Salvador is a shiny little object, but... I mean, there's so much poverty and corruption in these countries. I mean, I see it every day. I mean, from Philippines to Indonesia. I mean, you should see these people in Twitter philanthropy where they're from. They're from all over the world.
All over the world, yeah. Well, what's fascinating to me is, so Cash App, Strike, there's a bunch of these companies that now are plugging into the Lightning Network. And for those that don't know, most of these applications used to be walled gardens or closed, right? So let's say I have money on my PayPal account and I want to send it to Bill. He has to have PayPal. I have to have PayPal. If I have a Venmo account and John wants money, John has to have Venmo in order for me to send it via Venmo. And so each one of these networks was closed. Now, all of a sudden, they integrate with the Lightning Network. And now a Venmo user, if it was on the Lightning Network, could send money to somebody on Cash App. Cash App could send someone to PayPal. PayPal could send a Strike. And what you get is for the peer-to-peer payment systems, that's interesting, right? Okay, like that solves some problem. But even more importantly is then when a bank starts to plug in. So we've seen banks in Nigeria, in Australia, in Mexico, et cetera, start to actually set up their own Lightning nodes. And they'll say things like, hey, anywhere in the world, regardless of what app you have, you can now send money to a user of our bank because we have a Lightning node. Mm-hmm. And I think what it does is it just creates this like connectivity around the world where it breaks down those barriers and makes it much easier to send economic value.
Yeah. And it's a virus and it's happening right now.
Yeah.
And people are complaining. And I saw your tweet the other day. I agree with it about these scams on Twitter and how many scams there are. But I look at it and I say, okay, yeah, that's a problem. But look at the frequency of which it's increased. And if you really look at it and you look at who's doing it, it's a lot of these third world countries putting their BTC addresses and those type of things, right? And I've seen that go up significantly. So
it's crazy.
I think it's like a virus. I don't think it can be stopped.
Yeah. All right. For everyone who's watching, we're going to do a bunch of giveaways today. Okay. So one, Bill already announced one giveaway. Tell us the details of this giveaway and then we'll tell you what we're going to do.
Yeah. So many of you know that, you know, my grandfather founded Pulte Homes, which is a great business. And he founded it in 1950 and it's today about a $14 billion company. When he ran it, it was about a $16 billion company. But basically it went from being a small time home builder to the number one home builder in the country. And what I wanted to do was really memorialize and document, especially while I was fresh in my memory at a young age, because I'm 33, my grandfather was 85 when he died, was get his stuff into writing. And so here's my book, and it's written by William J. Pulte, and William J. Pulte, which is my grandfather, it's for free. I'm selling it for the big fat price of $0. And again, I'm just trying to really help teach a way that my family was able to make money and be able to allow other people to make money, just like my family has, because everybody should be able to have access to wealth, in my opinion. So we are going to be picking on the show here today somebody to get $10,000 who has read this book. It's very, you know, it's a very light read. It's a very good read. It's, you know, it's about my grandfather and I. And, you know, somebody who can really use the $10,000, whether that's for a business, whether that's for, you know, anything. And so we're going to be doing that. And then in a couple of days, I'm going to be doing another 10 grand and another 5 grand. And so that's really what we're doing.
I don't know if anyone heard that, but Bill said he's going to give out $10,000 to somebody who read the book. So you guys might want to go get the book. Where can we send people to go get the book as a starting point?
Pulte.org/ebook. It's finally back up. The site crashed yesterday, but
really?
We're back. Oh, yeah.
What happened when the site crashed? You just sent so many people there?
We put it on Dropbox and they could handle the traffic. So, yeah, it was insane.
All right. So Bill's going to give away $10,000.
Great book name, by the way.
Yeah.
You like the home that Pulte built?
That's what you're excited about?
Yeah.
It's a good name. All right.
Well, God first, family second, Pulte family third, you know?
Explain that.
Well, my grandfather's philosophy was basically like, you know, look, like a Pulte family being like, whether it's your, you know, business or what have you, you know, you want to put God first, family second, and then business after that in kind of that order. So sometimes people get things mixed up and they put their business before those two. And, you know, he would always say to employees, you know, today it's called work-life balance, but he was a little bit more explicit and said it that way.
Yeah. I love that. The ideas that are popular today, they're not new. Right. It's just somebody had a different way of describing it before. All right. So you're going to give away $10,000. We're going to do that a little bit later in the show. Let's start first with yesterday. Francis Ngannou, I think is how you say his name. The UFC superstar says he's going to get paid in Bitcoin. What's going on with that?
Yeah, he's from Africa. He tweeted a few days ago saying, I really like this Bitcoin stuff. I've been learning a lot about it. I bought some. I think it's the future. I'm thinking about taking 50% of my purse in Bitcoin. And I guess Cash App hit him up right afterwards and was like, hey, we should do this together. Because literally 2 or 3 days later, he announced a deal with Cash App where he's going to be taking it 50% of his purse at the next UFC event in Bitcoin. He said, Bitcoin is the future and I'm a believer. And then they gave away standard kind of Cash App giveaway. They gave away some Bitcoin as well as with the announcement. So I think it's interesting. Yeah, this is his actual announcement yesterday. They gave away $300,000 in Bitcoin. But I think it's interesting. He obviously understands, like, this is back to our point of like people outside of the United States that don't deal with these issues all the time of remittances and all these different things and the difficulty of being underbanked or unbanked. The problems that these people face, and he's seen this stuff firsthand back in his home country. So I think it makes sense for him to understand kind of how the technology works and why it's useful. But it's crazy to see like this is just continuing to happen, right? I think culture is becoming this stuff is becoming ingrained in culture. We've seen plenty of athletes, musicians, entertainers, all of this kind of stuff of people that want to be paid in Bitcoin, and I think it's fascinating to see.
Do you think every athlete, Bill, will eventually just take Bitcoin or like a part of their salary in Bitcoin?
Probably not.
No?
No, I don't think so.
Because it's too speculative?
I mean, maybe, but I don't know. Do we need them to take it?
No, but I think that it's like now it could become like cool.
Yeah.
Right? Like Odell Beckham Jr. does it, right? Francis does it. Aaron Rodgers did it. Saquon did it. Russell Okung, who everyone forgets he was the first one to do it, right? They almost kind of made it a thing where like you do it. Sure, there's an economic benefit, but like this signals I'm forward thinking. This signals this is part of my brand. Like this is, you know, what I'm, how I think about the world almost to some degree.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, maybe, I don't know. I just, again, get back to the point, forget all of us for a second, forget the Americans. Look at what's going on in these worlds, in these third world countries. I mean, these currencies, they're being inflated. I mean, they're not worth anything. I mean, Bitcoin is going to literally, you know, transform these countries.
Yeah,
I completely agree. We were talking about Turkey the other day, right? When the news came out, they lost 50% against the U.S. dollar in a matter of days, like virtually overnight. People couldn't get money out of banks, right? There's a whole set of issues, and that's just one example. But this happens all over the world.
And like, how many people are there in Turkey? I don't even know.
Yeah, I don't know. Look,
a few hundred million at least.
Turkey population, 84 million.
84 million. Yeah. I mean, that's a lot. And, you know, you get 100 other companies that, or 100 other countries that size. I mean, that's double United States, right?
Yeah, it becomes huge. All right. Second thing I want to talk about is housing. You and your family have been in the real estate game for a long time in various aspects. Obviously, there's Pulte Homes, right? A number of other aspects. What's going on in the real estate market right now? It seems like residential is just exploding in price.
Well, the last time I was here, if you may remember, we were talking about supply chain issues and those type of things. I think they're real. I think that it's going to definitely continue to be a hard time for housing in terms of the supply aspect. But I think you'll probably see some relief come the second half of the year in terms of supply chain, availability of product, et cetera. So,
do you think that housing is being appropriately measured within the inflation numbers?
So, no.
I saw the other day, and tell me where we think this is going. But I saw the other day the breakdown was like it's about a third of the CPI is shelter, and they have it at 4% currently. But basically, every other metric or kind of measurement system you use, whatever you want to do, is somewhere between like 15% and 30%. So it's drastically being undermeasured when it comes to CPI. Like, what are your general thoughts on that?
I think that as long as supply remains low and interest rates remain low, that it'll be hard to buy a house for a low price.
Yeah.
But if, let's say, for example, these guys, have you seen how BlackRock and these other guys are going in and buying property and then renting it out?
Yep.
You know, if that supply ever comes online, then you could see, I think, some disinflation in housing prices. But I think you're going to see it in other commodities before you see it in housing. In fact, I think housing could be strong through the end of the year, frankly.
Do you think the real number's somewhere between 15 and 30? Percent
Over year. From a housing standpoint? Yeah. I mean,
the average rent in America is up. I think it's like 15 or 20%.
Yeah, rentals are like 15,
average
20.
Average home prices are up.
30.
But where is it going to be in a year or two? I don't know.
Yeah.
Right? Well, and also how much of it is year over year change, right? So obviously it's not going to compound at 20% a year every single year for a decade, right?
Well, exactly. And think about it. Like last year, what did they have? You couldn't evict people. You couldn't really pass on price increases because it was the middle of a virus. So, you know, that's where I come at with Bitcoin is I'm the biggest bull on Bitcoin, but I just say, you know, maybe there's going to be a little bit of a breather here. And I hope so in housing because people are just...
It's hard.
It's very hard. In fact, I've been really pushing Pulte Homes, which I should say, you know, I'm not affiliated with. I don't speak with them. I don't speak on behalf of them, rather. Mm-hmm. I'm no longer on the board there, et cetera, so I can make these comments. But, you know, I've been really pushing them on getting into rentals. I've been public about that on Twitter. And we'll see if that ends up coming to fruition. That would be very nice. Because I think, you know, frankly, whether it's Pulte Homes or some of these other big home builders, you know, they could do a great service, I believe. And some of them are, frankly, D.R. Horton, Lennar, those are the number one, number two builders now. You know, they're starting to offer those type of rental properties because, you know, you look at some of these prices of these homes. I mean, it's unbelievable what people are.
Yeah. Here in Miami, we've seen so rents for apartments are up about 20-25%. A bunch of people who moved from New York, San Francisco, et cetera, last year, all their rental agreements now are coming up for renewal. And so literally there's just 20-25% increases, which is a little sticker shock, especially if you come from a place like New York where there's rental controls and things like that. So I think that's one thing going on. But the home prices, like if you go on Zillow and you look at some of these homes and you basically just go to the price kind of history, what Zillow shows you is what it was listed for, if it was removed or increased or whatever. And you'll see a home that was listed in, you know, May of 2020. And let's say it was listed for $2 million. It's now listed for $6 million. And you can just see every couple of months, they just kept increasing the prices, trying to solicit a buyer. Now, nobody bought the home. Right. So maybe they're overpricing or whatever, but the rate at which they were increasing that price is hundreds of percent in some cases. Mm-hmm. And so to your point, I don't think it can go up forever, obviously, from a rate of change. What my big question is let's say a home was $2 million. Now let's just say that it's four. So it kind of doubled over the last year or so in these.
Well, what geography are we talking about? Because in real estate, if somebody's listening to us and they're in Nebraska, right,
very
that's going to be completely different than Miami.
Yes.
South Bend, Indiana is going to be completely different than Phoenix, Arizona.
I just wonder, will we see lower home prices than the pre-pandemic levels, or will we get some cooling off?
I don't think you will. I don't think you'll ever
I don't think
see
that.
You'll,
no, I don't think you will either. No. Right. And I mean,
you
might.
I mean, you know, let's say that the federal government pulls out their support, like we were talking to the mortgage bond market, for example, and you saw interest rates go up materially, which I don't think they will. But if interest rates did go up 300-400 basis points, then I do think you'd see prices go down materially.
Do you think mortgage rates go back to 6%? They're currently at like 3.5%.
No. I don't think so. I think actually, again, I'm a little bit of a contrarian on this standpoint, which is I think, you know, they could go higher in the next couple of months, but I think over the next 6 to 9 months, you may actually see, if they do a rate hike, I actually think that after their first or second rate hike, if they even get to a second one, they'll actually be cutting rates. That's my
yeah, view. I don't think that they can sit there and, you know, I saw a bank CEO who will go unnamed, JP Morgan, and he said that they're going to do 7 rate hikes.
Yeah, that's crazy. Like, I don't think they're going to do more than one. And if they do, I think that they'll, you know, have to lower it or cut it or something.
Even if they do 2 or 3, to your point, maybe they don't even do that many, but even if they do, they're going to feel the pressure pretty quickly, I think is what you're basically saying, same thing that I think.
Yeah. My grandfather, and you know, one of the reasons I wanted to put this book together, not to get back to this, but I think it can be very helpful to people, is he used to call it, and he taught me that, you know, interest rates were the mother's milk for housing. And, you know, in many ways, interest rates are the mother's milk for the stock market. So I think the stock market could actually, not all stocks, but I think a lot of stocks could actually have a lot of problems in the coming months too.
Yeah. Do you think that the average person is likely to buy home still? Or do you think that they're more likely to rent? Like, especially like the younger generations?
I think buy.
You think buy. Okay, explain.
Yeah. Well, I just think people look at their different peers, they look at their different friends, and they say, oh my God, you know, so-and-so bought a house, and oh my God, can you believe it's up, you know, $25,000 or $50,000? And so I think as long as that continues, people are going to want to buy homes.
Yeah. The other thing that I think is really interesting around the home market is interest rates are a big piece of this. Also, like the whole move to remote work. We've got a bunch of young people that we know that are now, I don't know, they're like semi-transitory, right? Like they basically now are like, okay, I'm going to go somewhere for a month. I'm going to go somewhere for 2 or 3 months. Then I'm going to go somewhere else. And what I wonder is like how much of this is going to change the landscape versus, no, that's just like tech workers, right? And everyone else is going to say, hey, look, I still got to go to my job. I still got to have a home. And so I'm still willing to buy, you know, put down roots and not necessarily move from place to place.
Yeah, I don't think that's going away.
Yeah. Is people still buy the homes?
Well, people are still buying the homes and working remotely. It's kind of like with the Bitcoin thing, right? Bitcoin's new technology to these areas. Zoom is a new technology, right? Not really, but you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And people are wanting home offices. I mean, that's what we're seeing is, you know, all across the United States, every builder, I believe, is seeing, you know, we want, you know, more room in, you know, the office for the home office. And I don't think that's going away.
Are they changing the way that they're building the homes?
Sure.
Yeah, sure. To build like an actual large office that could facilitate being there all day.
100%.
Yeah, it is interesting because I think historically people have always said like, oh, like it's a 3-bedroom home, right? You could turn one of the bedrooms into an office or—
No, now they're just strong arming it. And then they're offering it as part of the package to sell the house. But the problem is they're not even having a hard time selling the house now because things are selling like hotcakes.
Yeah.
You can't sell these things fast enough. You can't put them up fast enough to sell them right now.
What did they used to call the home office? A den?
Yeah,
a den. Right, a den, right? Which was like kind of an office, kind of like a weird room or whatever.
It's a rich person's fancy way of calling an office.
Yeah. It's an office just for rich people.
Yeah, a den, right?
It's an office for the least favorite child.
But like to me, I do think that there's an entire like strategic opportunity for home builders. They say, listen, we're going to build it so it's big. We're going to include all the AV stuff, right? We're going to have like a camera that can go ahead and it can be used for Zoom. We're going to have it pre-installed, all this stuff. Like you could easily see people be like, man, that's cool. I want it. It's probably not that expensive to actually hook all that stuff up and kind of wire it to be a fully home office. And how many people want to go back to the office when they can wake up, walk into, you know, the office, keep their basketball shorts on and put on a suit and tie, do their little meeting and then go back to the couch, right?
You know, when I was on the board at Pulte Homes, we were one of the first builders to put Wi-Fi in homes and stuff like that. Now that's a little outdated and stuff like that. But I think that that's the big mission for these home builders now is not just how can you build affordable product, which I talked about rentals, but how can you also figure out a way where you can, you know, from a production standpoint, like you're saying, either build studios or Zoom rooms or these type of things in these new homes. I think it's going to be really interesting.
I mean, to a degree, that's already happening, right? With Airbnb, I think, what do they have? They have like an internet connectivity test now.
Now they do. They used to not have it. Things change, right?
And over the last year or 2 years with everyone doing this, they're like, hey, we should be able to test how strong the internet is in this house. We don't want to go somewhere and work from somewhere if the internet's not good. So they do that. Next thing you know, we've had people on the show before that were, they're building out basically rentals for short-term people to come in and do work in. And there's going to be offices, there's going to be Zooms, there's going to be good internet, there's going to be all this stuff. And ultimately what we're going to see is, like, in my opinion, people are still going to own their main residence, right? But they're going to continue to travel. So like Brian Chesky's probably not the greatest example because he's the CEO of Airbnb, but he said he's going to keep—
And he's rich.
Yeah, and he's rich, right? But he owns his house and he says now he's going to start traveling around to different places. But I think there's a lot of people who are doing that, that want kind of the experience of going to different areas. They're still going to own a primary residence, but what it does is it increases the demand for this stuff, but lowers the supply because all these people still own primary residences. So I think it's going to become much more of like an investment for people to rent out these homes or buy these homes and rent them out. But ultimately, I don't know how much it's going to impact the actual price of the homes.
John, you're in your mid-20s. What are all your friends doing? Are they trying to buy homes? Are they trying to rent? Are they moving from Airbnbs? What are they doing?
Well, I think right now, like, it's a transition period, right? So when you're 21, you're most likely, you're not going to own a home. You're going to rent a home, right? When you're out of college, whatever you do, when you work, when you're trying to build up that wealth, you're going to rent. Right now, it's actually cheaper to buy a home and pay your mortgage down than it is to rent in a lot of urban areas in the United States, especially rural areas as well. I personally rent. I've been looking at homes, just investment stuff.
Oh, you trying to buy a house?
I've been looking at homes just investment-wise and everything like that. But obviously, when you can pay down your mortgage and own equity in something, it's a lot better than just renting a home and paying someone else's mortgage off or giving them money as an investment. So yeah, I think right now a lot of my friends are starting to look at owning a home, but also a lot of my friends live in major cities, right?
Well,
so
when you also have to, you also have to think about the incentive side of this, right? Which in my opinion is, from the business perspective, they want to open this up. They want to have employees that are not centrally located in one geographic area. Like I believe it was Coinbase and Airbnb were the two examples that their CEOs were tweeting out and saying, hey, basically we had X percent of people that were centrally located and now it's gone down dramatically and everyone's kind of—
They used to hire a bunch of people in the Bay Area.
Now it's everywhere. And the idea, I mean, it's pretty obvious, right? You can lower the cost of employees, you can get better workers, you open the talent pool. There's a bunch of kind of advantages that this has for the company, but ultimately that filters down. So if you're an employee and you don't have to go into an office every day and you can work from wherever because you're remote, it opens up the door for you to be able to travel different places and do these things. So now that that's an option, I think it's naturally going to pick up in volume. And if the companies are incentivized to continue to hire people outside of their geographic region, why wouldn't that continue? It's only going to accelerate.
Yeah, I agree. We've seen over the pandemic, the last 2 years or so, a lot of young people got very excited all of a sudden about investing. And so whether it was with meme stocks, whether it was Bitcoin, whatever, they all got interested. And now what you're seeing is kind of the maturation. So a bunch of, you know, John, you want to tell Bill real quick what happened over the summer of 2020 when I called you? What stocks you had?
Oh, yeah. I had basically a diverse portfolio of a bunch of like pandemic bets of things that I knew would rebound once the world opened back up, right?
It's pretty smart. Bets.
Yeah. Well, I mean.
Tell them what you had, though.
I had a few cruise lines, airlines. Nope, not Pulte Homes. I should have, though. I should have gotten on the phone with you. But I need some alpha from you. We'll talk about that off camera. joking. But yeah, I had a bunch of stuff that I knew went down because people were not out there in the world traveling and doing other things. And I thought that it would rebound in the next few years.
Were you buying Zoom?
No, I should have bought Zoom. Zoom went up a ton, obviously, because
Nancy Pelosi was buying Zoom.
I know. She knows more than me about that.
Should have followed her bets. She has good timing usually.
Google calls.
The thing about the pandemic bets that was absolutely hysterical was when I called John. He didn't mention one of the stocks that he had in there. What was the electric car? Not Tesla.
Nikola.
Nikola.
That wasn't a pandemic.
How about that guy getting nailed?
I got out of that though.
So what I said to John was, I said, hey, listen, I said, you know, I can't tell you what to do. You make your own investment decisions. You're a big boy. You do your own research, whatever. But I said, but I think that you should probably look at Bitcoin and be, you know, kind of more concentrated rather than so diversified. I said, if I was you, I'd pick, you know, some Bitcoin and maybe pick one or two stocks. And so he called me back, I don't know, like a week later, did a bunch of research. And he's like, all right, I got two assets now. I'm like, what? And he was like, I got Bitcoin, I got Tesla. And I was like, all right. And so obviously he did very well. Congratulations, John.
I got Tesla before the stock split.
Funny story about it.
Just want to be clear.
Let him know where you came out.
Yeah. Go ahead. What,
Bill? A funny story about Nikola. So I gave away 3 Teslas on Twitter. I don't know if you remember that,
yes.
But going back 2 years ago or something. Yeah, this is when everybody thought giving away money on the internet was crazy. Now it's like the hot thing to do. It's still kind of crazy to give away a Tesla, but I gave away 3 Teslas, and then I think he followed me or something like that, or somebody tweeted at him, Trevor Bilton. And so he and I, he was very nice. We exchanged DMs, and he was going to do the, going to give me a truck, you know, to give away for free. And I was like, oh, this is sweet. Cause I had to pay for the 3 Teslas. You know what I mean? Cause I had some people who talked to some of the people at Tesla, and they're like, hey, you know, if we do this for you, then we got to do it for everybody. So I knew Tesla wasn't going to sponsor any vehicles, but Nikola. And then I was kind of like, I was asking questions or something like, and again, I don't remember the exact, but like, you know, okay, like when can I get the truck or da 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 da.
He's like, dude, I don't even got one yet.
and so anyway, so like a week later, I'm like, hey man, I'm gonna pass on this for right now, but I'll catch you later. It was just a gut feeling, you know.
That was a good gut feeling.
Yeah.
The stock went up to $65 and is now at under 9. It's a pretty crazy, just, you know, complete drop.
But I would have taken the truck. I mean, that, you know, I spent a lot of money buying those Teslas and just giving them away for somebody who retweeted me on Twitter.
Well, here's the one thing that I will say that I think is very interesting about a lot of these companies is like that one may be an outlier. I think that I have a friend who I won't mention because I don't know if they'd be comfortable with me mentioning him. But when the pandemic hit, he's in the lending business. And so he does a lot of lending. And what he said to me was 2 things are about to happen. He's like, fraud is going to go through the roof. And it's not because people are greedy. He says, actually, what's going to happen is people are going to get in a bad situation. They're going to get in a dire situation, right? And when they get in a dire situation, let's take like a small business, even a technology company, whatever. Like, let's fudge the numbers this one time. Yeah. We'll never do it again, right? Or let's do this. You know, this one time, we'll never do it again. And he's like, and then the problem is that they think the money's going to, you know, the revenue's going to come back in the next quarter or whatever. And next thing you know, they just, it gets worse and worse and worse. And then all of a sudden you got this huge mess on your hands and obviously unethical, illegal, whatever. So he's like, one, now fraud's going to get way worse. He's like, and then 2 is there's a bunch of free money floating around. So some people are going to be in a dire situation and then there's going to be money being handed out to people. And they're going to be doing all kinds of crazy stuff. And so I remember reading right around the same time, a lot of electric vehicle stuff was happening. Those people had like, what was it in Brooklyn, I think? The SWAT team or the cops showed up and they literally went in the dude's house and he had just been like hoarding PPE stuff. Or there was another article I read, a guy was selling hand sanitizer on like Amazon or something.
Yeah, remember those times? That was crazy.
Right? And he was
toilet paper.
He was buying the hand sanitizer for like $1 and he was selling it for like $50 or like whatever the numbers were. And basically Amazon was like, we're going to crack down on people price gouging. Right? And it was like, look, again, you know, you understand the economic incentives take over and obviously people do some crazy stuff. But at the same time, you're like, man, there's no hand sanitizer available, right? There's no toilet paper. There's no whatever. And so I always go back and forth on like where the free market should operate, right? And kind of like take over versus like, okay, now it's too egregious, right? Now you're actually taking advantage of people. And I don't think that line.
But let's be honest. If you're investing in Nikola, and I love, you know, the people who invest in Nikola, but you know, you got to know, and I'm sure you knew, you know, that was speculative. And if you didn't, then you're going to learn the lesson
completely.
That it's completely effing speculative, you know?
I wish, I don't want to say the name of a stock and then be wrong on it. But I'm pretty sure. Let me make sure. I'm pretty sure that this is real. QuantumScape is.
Yeah, it's a big stock. It's a big company, no?
Yes. Market cap at $8 billion now. Okay. Yeah. It was much higher. At one point, it was $114 share.
QTUM ticker?
Yeah. It's now under $19. So it's gone down a lot. The reason why I remember this company is because I was on CNBC, and they do a very good job. The one thing I will give CNBC credit for always is they protect me when I'm on there in the sense of, I don't know anything about QuantumScape or other, you know, stocks and electric vehicles, whatever. I'm not here to talk about things that I don't have, you know, kind of unique insights on or whatever. So I was on for an extended period of time on a segment, and they were basically asking about Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies. And there's some traders on. They started asking about public stocks. So they didn't ever ask me about any of this stuff. And out of nowhere, the host basically was like, you know, Pomp, I get you probably don't have a lot to add to that, but like, you got any thoughts? And I couldn't help myself because while they were talking, I was like, what the hell is QuantumScape? Right? Yeah. I'm like Googling around, whatever. I was like, this is like a public shitcoin, yeah, right? Like it's like publicly traded shitcoin, right? You basically have like a company that's public that has no products. They're talking about like 2027 revenue, you know, projections, and it's trading or whatever. And by the way, maybe it becomes an amazing company. Maybe it doesn't. But I was just like, holy shit. Like whether we're talking about the public markets, we're talking about private markets, or we're talking about cryptocurrencies. When the market gets frothy, you see the same type of behavior across all the assets.
Exactly. Or said differently, when interest rates are low, and to your point, you said, well, you know, will it really matter if interest rates even go up a little bit? Yes, because on the margin, these shitty companies, you know, they're having to pay just even a little bit more, which is a lot because many of them aren't earning any money. And then what happens is the price of the stock goes down and then the guys need to get liquidity, right? And it's just a frickin', so,
it's just over and over again.
It's just over and over again. I mean, yeah, that's why I think, you know, even in the crash of 2020, you know, good stocks went down materially because it was a liquidity issue, right? I mean, the whole market just melted down.
Well, what do you think about the use of, so Milo came out, I believe yesterday, that said they're going to take Bitcoin almost as like a collateral for a mortgage on someone's home. What do you think about that?
That's fine. I mean, that's fine. Again, I don't mean to beat the dead horse, but the third world countries, I think, is where it's going to be at. Now, what's going on with China? I mean, that would be the big kahuna.
I think
why don't they just go buy, you know, $500 billion worth of Bitcoin? Well, too much accountability, right? Math.
If China went and bought $500 billion worth of Bitcoin, that would be about 50% of the circulating supply right now. So I don't think they could actually execute it, but let's just say that was their intention, whether they said it or not. I think the price of Bitcoin would go to $500,000, right? Because if you had basically come in and try to buy half the supply, right? If you go back, Bitcoin went from $10,000 in October of 2020 to by March or April, it had peaked at like $64,000, $65,000, right? So basically 600% increase in a matter of 6 months or less. And what really was driving that was institutions started to come into the market and they basically were saying, I want Bitcoin. So I'm willing to pay $10,000. And a bunch of Bitcoiners, about 70% of the people who held it, said, I'm not selling it to you at $10,000. So, okay, well, I'll pay $10,000. Oh, nope, now 11, 12, 15, 20, 25, 30. And it kept going up. And every time that they would increase their bid, it would unlock a little bit of liquidity from people who are the long-term holders. But we didn't get massive unlock until we got up over $50,000. Mm-hmm. And so that was only probably, if I had to guess, probably single-digit billions went into the asset, right? Like at that time.
And how much leverage is in this space?
I think that the leverage in the crypto market in general is still like relatively high. There's been some flushes that have been pretty healthy. Right now specifically, I think that it's still on the higher end. What I think people don't appreciate though is there's a big difference between almost what I'll call new leverage versus old leverage. I mean, that's a good way to think about it. The new leverage is like if you can go on a derivatives platform, put 50x leverage, 100x leverage, that's very different than going on a kind of a traditional derivatives exchange, right? And being able to put, you know, kind of light leverage or two or three, maybe four or five times leverage. And so what I think ended up happening at a number of times in Bitcoin and crypto's life cycle is that fairly inexperienced people saw leverage. And as like most things, they said, this looks amazing. I can get rich quick. So they started to use these kind of exotic high leverage products, but they're not experts at it. And so the experts, they're using kind of much less leverage and they're going ahead and doing it. But we've seen time and time again, how do you get a 50% flush in prices in a single day? It's leverage getting wiped out. It's just liquidations, just right down through an order book. And so I think that that's been a problem. It does seem to be improving a little bit. Some of the platforms have taken away, you know, 100x leverage type stuff. And they're like, okay, maybe we should only have 20, right? Which is still kind of crazy. But like at least
1.5 times leverage is a problem.
Yeah. but like you can see, right?
Anything greater than one.
Yeah, you can just see how this is becoming a bigger kind of focus of the industry. The other thing that I'll say is a lot of people forget that the Grayscale Bitcoin Trust, which now is trading at a 25% discount to NAV.
Which is unbelievable.
Pretty significant. Yeah. They were probably one of the biggest drivers of the price increase from Bitcoin from 10K to 60 initially, because what was happening was a lot of these Wall Street guys were coming in with big dollars. They were giving money to Grayscale in the private placement. Grayscale was then taking that money and going and buying in the market. When they would buy in the market, though, they were buying up to 150% of all the Bitcoin being produced in a single day, according to the mining reward. So you have a buyer in the market that's buying more than what's being mined.
Yeah, it's kind of like a share buyback almost, right? Where
it just explodes.
It artificially increases the prices.
Yes. And then there's no redemption function. So people couldn't get their money out of the fund. The only way to get your, you know, kind of your money back would be to sell the shares to somebody else. And so it was kind of this perfect storm for this massive increase in Bitcoin price. The big question ends up being, what happens now? Right? Like where does the interest
MSTRs trade? Where do they trade at?
Yeah,
I'm saying like where will they trade at in the coming years? Like MSTR, it's all correlated to Bitcoin, right?
Bitcoin's definitely a big piece of it.
Now, what percent are they trading at over NAV of their Bitcoin? So, assuming their base business is worthless.
So right now, let's see, in pretty much 2017, 2018, all the way up till 2020, MicroStrategy was trading anywhere between like $100 to like $210, right? It was kind of like the range that it went over a number of years, four years or so. Obviously, towards the Q4 of 2020, when he first made the first purchase in August, he went from August, he was trading about $125, all the way up by February of 2021, it was over $1,000. So just massive increase in price. Now it's kind of come down and it's trading essentially
sideways. Yeah, it's like 400 or something. But do you know what it is in terms of
475
net asset value or no?
So the market cap is 490.
Like if GPTC trades at 25% discount, what does MSTR trade at?
Yeah, I'm going
to tell you. And again, I'm not trying to quiz you here.
I got the internet. You can quiz me all you want. Yeah. So they own 124,391 Bitcoin. And at today's price, that is the cost basis for them is about $3.75 billion, according to Bitcoin Treasury. So maybe slightly off, but let's say this number is correct. $3.75 billion. Today's value is $5.2 billion, which is a 1.4x.
And they're market cap's 4.9.
So it's actually trading below the Bitcoin on their
What were the numbers again? 4.9 and
versus 5.1 or
5.2? 5.2. That's billion great. In Bitcoin, right? So like actually pretty healthy in the sense of
it is because when it was getting up to like 600, 700, 800, 900, I traded that thing a couple days. You want to know something effing crazy? So yeah, it was nuts. I don't know. I had this stupid idea to put in like, I don't know, like $5 million in MSTR. Okay. I probably shouldn't be telling the story, but
you're telling it now.
but I put like $5 million in MSTR. And I forget what it was, a year or two ago or something like that. And I shit you not. So I must have executed the trade at like 3:30 in the afternoon.
Okay.
I woke up the next morning and the fucking thing was up like 25% or something.
You sold it all?
I sold the whole fucking thing. I said, holy crap. I said, I've never made $1 million that quick in my life. You know what I mean? I mean, even if you look at it in terms of like, okay, I went to sleep and then I woke up. I mean, I do because like, you know, with my general stocks, I can make that much money overnight. But, you know, to do that on some trade, highly speculative. And I was like, okay, like this is just stupid.
This is crazy.
Get me out of this damn thing.
So when you think about your investing, how much of it is like trading versus long-term holding of stocks versus the real estate?
Very little's trading.
Got it. But, so it's more like the fun stuff.
Other than, you know, helping people on Twitter and I run my air conditioning companies. That's where I made most of my money. You know, I do enjoy trading, you know, once in a while.
So. How do you spend your day now?
Well, I wake up, obviously. And sorry for my haters, I wake up. By the way, I've been getting like hate. I don't even know what's wrong with these people, but they've been upset that I'm giving away my money on Twitter. It's like, I've never even heard of something like that.
Yeah.
It's like, what is going
They're
on?
They're mad
probably,
they didn't win.
Yeah, probably mad they didn't win.
That's actually most of it. Actually, there was a fairly prominent person, won't say their name, but, you know, fairly prominent person was blowing me up a couple weeks ago or something, you know, for, I don't even know what it was for. And I was like, wow, why is this person hitting me so hard? Like, I don't even know this person. And I look in my DMs and, you know, there's probably 6 or 7 or 8 messages with them asking for money. And, you know, it's just amazing to me that like, you know, some people, like I'm all for people asking for money. And I say, you know, like, call me a beggar, meaning me, Pulte. I'll be a beggar. I'm a beggar. Sure, I'm a beggar, you know, to try to help more people. But it's one thing to say, hey, can I have money? And then to go out in public and just start bashing you because you don't give them money. You know what I mean? So that's pretty demoralizing. But yeah. But I do wake up in the morning and then I get on Twitter and I check in with my companies and I find out, you know, is there anybody in critical need or crisis that we can help? And we're helping people all day, every day, not on my main feed, but on either the super follower feed, which everybody should go subscribe to, or on the team giving feed or on the team Pulte feed. I mean, people are dying of cancer and, you know, these people, these teammates of mine, you know, they're really the ones doing the work. You know, I put up yesterday afternoon, I just tweeted out to the super followers, you know, some lady to help her, I think, with like her electric bill or something. She's dying of cancer and it was funded like instantly. So that's the kind of stuff that I live for throughout the day, you know?
Yeah, that's awesome. I love that. Speaking of, I think it's time.
Yeah.
Past 12.
I told everybody that we'd be doing it at 12. So let me get the number. Why don't you talk for a second? Let me figure out what the... Yeah, talk for a second.
What, you have to figure out who it is?
I have to figure out who it is. All and right. then I have to get their ad handle and then their cash sign. And then...
All right.
And then you're good to go.
What's your usual audience?
Like who?
Yeah, how many people? No, how many people?
How many people? On the old channel, we'd get a couple thousand watching. This is day one on the new channel, so I don't know what the new channel...
Yeah, why'd you get a new channel?
Well, because YouTube, see, they don't like when you're live streaming and putting clips on the same channel, because you're training a machine, right? Training an algorithm. So if you say, hey, we're live, and then in the afternoon, you're like, no, now we're clips, machine gets confused. We got YouTube and the executive team over there at YouTube's lost in the sauce. They don't know what
we're doing. How does Mr. Beast then go live? Because he goes live and it hits his main channel.
He only goes live very, very selectively.
Yeah.
Right. And so basically instead,
he's a whale.
Yeah. Well, and he's Mr. Beast. So, you know, we might have to bring Jimmy on here and then we'll just go like giveaway for giveaway. And then I'll just bow out real quick.
Yeah. Yeah. Keep doing it. Bring me and then I'll bow out. Yeah.
We'll just do the ultimate financial empowerment giveaway where we just all like, you get a car, you get a car, you get a car. And people are like, well, I don't need
a
car.
He just got over COVID. Did you see that?
Yeah. He said he had it for like 2 weeks.
Yeah. I talked to him a couple of days ago. He sounded fine.
Yeah. He's okay. He's good.
Yeah.
All right.
He's young.
He's young. Yeah.
Yeah. 23. Yeah. He's something like that.
Crazy.
North Carolina guy.
Yeah. What do you think about Jake Paul making $45 million last year?
Good for him. Yeah. Unbelievable, huh?
Tax-free, too.
You think he's on anything?
No.
I don't think so either.
No. I think that it's a great storyline for there to be controversy between Jake Paul, pretty much the most important / most viral boxer in the world right now, and the boxing purists hate it. Right, because of his past and who he is, but to have him versus the UFC, him versus Dana White,
yeah, that's great.
How much do you think they'd make? So everyone keeps talking about like Jake Paul versus Conor McGregor, Jake Paul versus you know whoever. How much do you think they'd make if it was Jake Paul versus Dana White?
Oh, they'd make a lot of money. They'd make a lot of money.
I actually
that'd be over in 2 seconds, though.
Yeah, but who would win?
You don't think Jake Paul would win?
I think that Jake would most likely end up winning.
Yeah, I think
the question
him.
The question would be: would he actually end it in seconds, or would they like play it out?
I don't know.
Because like, there's one thing is like you just walk and you just knock him out, right? Like, okay, cool. Like that was pretty decisive.
That guy's an animal.
There's a whole nother thing around like, no. Like, let's go a couple rounds, right? Let's have some fun here. Give the people some paid money. But I literally think that they would sell. I don't know. $20 million, $30 million
at least. Yeah,
more than that, right?
How about Mr. Beast doing 150 million views on Squid Games on his version of it, and Netflix only did 100 million views. Is that not unbelievable?
He went to Netflix to do it originally with them, right?
And then, I don't know. Did he?
I think the story was that he approached Netflix and be like, hey, I want to basically do like a remake, similar version of what Squid Games was. And they were like, no, we don't want to do it. And he was like, I'm doing it anyways.
I mean, his was probably more entertaining.
Yeah.
Do you check your DMs?
I check my DMs periodically.
Yeah, I check mine quite a bit.
But the only thing that has become crazy is all the spam on Twitter.
Yeah.
It's just out of control. I mean, I tweet and it's just like, so that's been a little annoying. I tweeted at the CEO of Twitter. He did not get back to me. He also did not fix the problem because the spam is still there. So I think they got, you know, If they get rid of the spam, one of the big questions is how much would the engagement metrics go down? How many users would they lose? I don't know, right?
I mean, the same argument could be made, though, like for, you know, if they got rid of Republicans on the platform, right?
Yeah. I think from my standpoint, at least, right, I don't think that they're like, oh, let's encourage spam because our engagement metrics go up, right? But I definitely do think that there's got to be a reason, and it could just be product prioritization. There's something going on.
How would you get rid of the spam?
I think that it's pretty simple. If somebody responds to your tweet with your profile picture, nuke them. Let's start there.
Yeah, right? So how would you do that? Just have an algo that goes through and scans for the photo?
Yeah, I mean, that would be like the most simple version, right?
Most of these people are, you know, and it's amazing, these scammers, they pick the dumbest photos of people that don't even look like they would be, that they would even put that photo of them on Twitter.
Well, see, I've got the spam in my Twitter is usually, it's one of two things. Either one is they literally just have my photo, right? And they're just like spamming, trying to.
Yeah, I got an idea on that. I'll tell you after.
All right, okay. And then the second thing is if somebody has, like, here's a good one. Ready? Is I found at, and they tagged something, a 3D game, and feels it would be better to invest in now before it pumps after the game launch. Telegram link,
yeah.
And then a gazillion hashtags. If you can't figure out that maybe shouldn't be in the replies to a tweet that has nothing to do with any of that stuff, then we might need to get some new people over there.
Well, I have to say something, which is I'm very happy that you are encountering a lot of spam. I'm very happy that they are going after you because
do you not have spam?
Let me just tell you, when I started doing this thing, I mean, I was like one of the big, you know, first giveaway people, yep, or whatever. I'm not saying that's brag. I'm just saying like
this was sort of Twitter philanthropy.
What? Yeah.
Twitter philanthropy.
Facts.
Allegedly. So when I did that, like I was like the one who's being impersonated. I don't know if you remember all this. This going back like 2 or 3 years ago.
Yes.
And so it's been very, I won't say enjoyable because I don't take enjoyment in you being spammed the shit out of. But
it's better that we're soliciting fire away from you.
Yeah, diffusing it across people. So yeah. It's very nice.
Yeah. The
people these days, when people impersonate me, they're just like, oh, that's fake. You know what I mean?
No, they're trained.
Yeah. And your team will get trained on, you know.
Maybe, allegedly.
They will.
Yeah. I met one time a guy, I was on a trip somewhere and he came up to me. He goes, hey man, he goes, you know, I read all the stuff. I watch, I listen to podcasts, but I got to tell you, I lost $20,000. I basically thought I was talking to you and I sent Bitcoin to somebody.
That sucks.
And I was like, man, that's really bad. He's like, but everything I've learned, I've made more than that. So like, you know, it was kind of like a wash. And I was like, you are a more positive person than
I am. But how do you do that though? Like, I don't understand that.
What?
Like, how do you lose $20,000 to a Twitter scammer? And maybe it's because I've been doing this now for 2 years and my teammates, my followers, my people that work with me, you know, if somebody wants to send you money, but you have to send them money first.
Yeah, don't do it.
Don't do it.
Yeah. Here's what I always tell people. I'll never ask you for Bitcoin.
Yeah.
So just everyone knows. I'll never ask anyone for Bitcoin. I get shit for it, actually. Like, we launched the Bitcoin pizza thing, and we're like, oh, there's no Bitcoin option. And I'm like, okay, so just so we're clear, people who don't understand Bitcoin want people to spend their Bitcoin on pizza. Maybe actually we should think about this in terms of, why don't you spend your depreciating fiat on the pizza and hold the Bitcoin? People are like, well, then, you know, it doesn't make sense. Blah, blah. Whatever, fine. There's a Bitcoin option. You want to be an idiot and you want to give me your Bitcoin for pizza? Knock yourself out. But you shouldn't do that. But also, I just don't ever ask for Bitcoin. And if you don't ask, then if somebody asks you for it, pretending to be me, like, very simple way to know that it's a scam. Right? Pretty simple. All right. You two got anything?
I got something for you, Bill. What would make it worth it for you? And would you ever move to Puerto Rico to save money on taxes or anything like that?
No.
No.
Good question, but no. I mean, how much money are we talking about?
John, you know? Would you ever move?
Depends on the amount of money.
If you could save, let's say that you made so much money that you had $2 million in taxes a year that you could save, would you move? No. Not for $2 million?
And why not?
If you were in a desperate situation, I think, and you won the lottery, in the extreme example, $700 million.
Yeah, sure.
You save half of that by moving to another country.
You can't do it afterwards.
Yeah, you can't do it afterwards.
You can't do it. Okay.
No, you gotta be, you gotta
well, it's income for that year.
I don't think I would do it for any amount of money.
So have you been in Florida for any hurricanes?
No.
Okay, so.
I was here for one last year.
Yeah, I grew up down here, and it was not fun when you have hurricanes. And if you're in Puerto Rico, I mean, it's the opposite of fun. It's worse. So that would be my concern. That's why I say that like that.
You wouldn't, for no amount of money?
No, because if it gets to the amount of money that I would consider doing it for, I wouldn't care about that amount of money because I have enough money.
For $20 million a year?
That means I'm making $40 million a year. So no.
What if you made 10?
I love living here too much.
No, dude, what if you made $10 billion a year?
$10 billion a year?
Mm-hmm.
Then I definitely wouldn't do it.
Think about how much philanthropy you could do with the money you
Wow, you're just going to give $4 billion to the government? Yeah, you are selfish. You're just going to give $4 billion to the government. And
you
want to
sponsor some tweets?
I'm just saying, if...
the next headline is Joe Pomp makes $10 billion a year.
And it's got nothing
and
to
gives it to at Pulte to give away.
And it's not necessarily even Puerto Rico. Like, I'm sure what they're doing down there is great. I'm sure they got nice
spots. Would you move to El Salvador?
No.
No.
No?
Me neither.
No.
Would you move to Portugal?
No, I like living in America.
Would you move to Texas?
Yeah, I mean, it's in America. I mean, it depends.
Puerto Rico is too, just so we're
clear. Joe, no, I know, but it's not, you know what I mean.
I feel like you and me are being bombarded by foreign agents right now.
Yeah, like, I don't get this.
How much do you love your country?
So you would give up money for everything everything that's beneficial for living here. You're close to family, you're close to friends, your quality of life is probably better.
Bro, if I had $10 billion a year, I'd move all y'all losers out there with me. I'd buy the island. I'd be like, listen, we own this shit now. Right? If you make that much money, that's what you have to do. You just have to move everyone with you. You're like, yeah, I got my family, friends, nice weather, no taxes.
$10 billion, you could buy whatever the hell you want here too.
Yeah, but it's just not the same.
Okay. I mean, that's up to you. I'll come visit.
I don't think that I would. I don't think that I would move. At the same time, I do think that a lot of people are moving, and that's why they have the incentive, right, just to get people to move there. So it all just depends. Like, also, I think that people who go to like sell a business or something like that, like it makes a ton of sense for people to move from California or New York to Florida or Texas, right, to a no state income. But that's only in most cases around 10%, you know, savings. Puerto Rico is a you know, depending on if you're coming from a high income bracket in those states, a 50% savings.
Can I ask you a separate question? I would ask you afterwards anyway.
Sure. Oh God, I'm so scared.
No, don't worry. I won't. I'm not that bad. But what do you think about these other social platforms? Are you going to be getting on any of those, or are you going to stay on Twitter?
Do I hear something funny?
Because you know you're tweeting at the CEO of Twitter.
Yeah, let them come for me. That's fine. We're all going to get canceled. Every single person is going to get canceled at some point. And then eventually what's going to happen is that then the executives at the companies get canceled, right? Which is, I forget who said this, but basically the cancel culture ends when the people doing the canceling start to get canceled, right? It's kind of like the bully on the playground. The bully is the bully to everyone until a bigger bully shows up and then all of a sudden they don't like the bullying thing, mm-hmm. right? Same thing happens in cancel culture. But the reason why I lit up when you asked me that question, I recently just got an email. I have no clue if this is real or not, but I said thumbs up to it. Is I got an email from Truth Social. Somebody at the Truth Social platform emailed me and said, would you like us to reserve your username? And I said, sure.
That's great.
I don't know if I'm actually going to sign up, but yeah, you make sure nobody else squats on that for me. That'd be great. And then they started to ask about... my cell phone number.
Were you sure it was actually them?
I have no clue. But I said, yeah, if you want to go ahead and do it. The email, I'm not going to say the email address, but the email itself came from @tmtgcorp.com, which, sure, maybe it's real, maybe it's not. Who knows? I don't care. They should hold on to it for me. And if they don't, then I won't join their platform.
Yeah,
probably won't join it anyways, but like that, we'll see, whatever. I do think it's hysterical, regardless of what you think of the people behind it.
Yeah, I agree.
But the whole idea of a platform that you basically say, you don't send a post, you don't send a tweet, you send a truth, like that's like trolling 101, right? Is that's really going to piss a lot of people off. But like, oh yeah, I truthed it.
You think we'll ever have decentralized Twitter?
No, I think that it's very hard to take the centralized services and decentralize them. Mm-hmm. So I don't think that the incumbents will decentralize. I also think that there's probably a higher likelihood that we'll get new types of services. So if you think of Twitter, Twitter was really something no one had ever seen before. It was microblogging, right? Like no one had that before. And so I think that we're likely to just get a new type of service. The question is like, what does that look like? I'm not sure yet. The other thing, you guys want to know another thing that I haven't seen people doing yet that I'm shocked by?
Let's hear it.
I'm shocked that marketers haven't already decided that they should use the airdrop mechanism to spam the hell out of people.
They already are. I've seen it before.
Well, are they? What are they doing?
They're just like airdropping ads in wallets, basically.
Yeah, like that. See, like that. Like I think that's a whole world where we're not ready for yet. It's like if you know that a bunch of people hold an asset and you can basically just airdrop things into their wallet.
Well, it was like you know, if you go on social media, like all these people will be like, leave your comment your wallet address or whatever, right? Or like leave it below, and they'll go in and they'll airdrop some people something or pick some winners. And I saw a brand do it the other day, and they were messing with people and they were just airdropping them ads basically. And it was like a joke, like ha ha ha, but it's like, hey, that's not really that funny. Like, let's not do that. But that's what it's going to turn into. If you have the ability to just drop something in someone's wallet like that, that's absolutely what they're going to do.
What do you mean airdropping like an NFT ad? Kind of deal?
Yeah, they basically, it's like a token that they basically say, hey, on the blockchain, go into every wallet that holds a CryptoPunk. Now we're going to airdrop a new token. And the new token is like, buy this, whatever on the token. So it ends up being an ad.
I'm going to use your bathroom real quick.
All right.
I had a long drive down, so all I had a lot of fluids then, all right?
All right, yeah. Of course. Before we go to wrap up, the last thing I want to talk about.
How long do we have?
With like no 10 minutes.
Oh, okay. I can wait.
Oh, you can wait? Yeah. All right.
I thought we were going till 1 or something.
No. Just another 10 minutes. 8 Sleep just had an announcement. They just signed Olympic gold medalist, number one ranked snowboarder, Red Gerard, to an 8 Sleep contract. And they're going to be powering Red Sleep and recovery ahead of the X Games and the Winter Olympics. And then Mateo tweeted, if you want to unlock your full potential, you need 8 Sleep energy. Pretty good.
Pretty good.
I feel
big
like
8 Sleep fan.
Do you have an 8 Sleep?
No, you want to buy one for me?
Yeah, we'll get one for you.
Yeah,
we'll get one for you. I feel like 8 Sleep is the big game changer, right? Is when you sleep on it, not only do you get deeper sleep, but you also get better rest because of the deep sleep. I do have to say, are you wear like any
Aura ring or something like that?
Yeah, do you wear that?
I did, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did you like it?
Yeah, it was cool.
It was cool. Apple Watch or no?
Not yet.
No?
Soon. need to.
Have you ever heard like a Whoop or any of those?
No.
No? All right. So I know Joe has tested a lot of these. John, I think you've had a couple of them, whatever. I got a problem. For those that don't know, I've got the Whoop on and I got the Apple Watch. I've always had the Apple Watch. The Whoop is a couple of days now. I've been testing this thing. These machines, they say a lot of different things. Like one will be like, you slept 8 hours. Another one will be like, you slept 6 hours and 15 minutes. I'm not going to say which one is saying which, but I'm like, I don't know what's going on here.
That's nuts.
Or one will be like, oh, you burned 1,000 calories.
I've tried a lot of them. I've worn the Apple Watch, the Whoop, even a Garmin at some point.
Oh, you did have the Garmin. You thought you were out there in the woods lost or something.
It's the Rolex of fitness.
I did not say that.
Bro, you literally had a compass on your watch. Yeah, a compass on it. So you're like, which way am I going? Northeast?
Well, the funniest part is that the Garmin was probably the most functional. Like if you're working out or something like that, it was way better than the Apple Watch.
Isn't it like a $2,000 watch?
No, it was like a couple hundred dollars. It's not 2000. Yeah. There's a difference between $200 and $2,000.
That's so where the measurements off or what?
So the measurements are, were definitely, I would say out of those three, the Apple Watch was the worst, for measurements. The Whoop was the best and the Garmin was in between. Out of my experience,
the Whoop was the best one.
Yeah. Cause the way I think about it is like the Whoop is specifically designed only to do one thing. And that one thing is measure all of your data, right? So it literally is focused on just that. So it does it the best. It's really accurate and you can track it basically like, there's a bunch of studies that are done where people wear the heart rate monitors and they wear the Whoop. It's same technology and it tracks very similar. Garmin is, mostly, focused on doing that. It has the watch component. It tracks maps. It does a few different things. And then the Apple Watch is the least focused on doing that. And it doesn't have the ability to do nearly what the other ones do.
I think that we should get the chest things.
Yeah, it's just
you ever seen these? Mm-hmm. Basically, it's like a strap that you put on, and it holds like a measurement device here. And that tells you all kinds of, you know, data, whatever. Not because I'm necessarily optimizing something, but I just think it would be cool to see.
Are you sponsored by anybody? Are you sponsored by 8 Sleep?
Nah, I don't deal with the personal fitness stuff. Joe over here.
You're an investor, though, in it, right?
Yeah, 8 Sleep. Yeah. I literally, if I forget to turn on the 8 Sleep or something, it's like as soon as I wake up, I'm like, damn, I forgot to turn on the 8 Sleep. Like, you can just tell. It's probably, somebody asked me recently, a founder that I invested in his company, he messaged me and he said, should I get the 8 Sleep or not? And I said to him, look, man, there's probably 3 or 4 technology devices in my life that I've purchased that I'm like, I cannot live without those. Cell phone, a computer, probably my Apple Watch, right? And the 8 Sleep.
But don't you condition yourself to not then be able to sleep in hotel rooms and stuff like that?
I don't travel. This is 2022. We're done with that travel
and
nonsense.
Some hotels have them
now. I'm virtual, baby. We're in the metaverse.
What happens when you finally go on Rogan?
Nah, I'll fly in, fly out. That's it. I don't need to be
on another note. He is not sponsored by them, but I am. So if you go to, if you go to 8sleep.com/Joe, you can get a nice little discount. I got you.
That's hilarious.
I use it. Hey.
You do.
Get it or don't. I don't really care. But
how much are they?
Do you think Ranger
$1,500 bucks? I think for the cover.
Is that what? Yeah, they have a bunch of different options. You can do like a. I have a cover. Look at me right there, looking fly as hell.
He's
on
got
that
a, thing. They got his face on a website. That's why he's all excited.
8sleep.com/Joe, and they have a few different options. You can do. I have like the cover, which essentially is like if you already have a mattress or you like your mattress, you just put the cover over. But they have a mattress too, which is more money, obviously. But it's good. I like it. It's the one thing I think about the product is, and this is very serious considering I sleep on it all the time, is the way I think about it is everyone always says you need 8 hours of sleep, 8 hours of sleep. And that's literally what the name says, 8 Sleep. But their whole thing is that if you can be in bed for 6 hours, but get the same amount of REM sleep and deep sleep, then you're getting just as high quality sleep as someone who slept 8, 9, or 10 hours that got that same amount of REM or deep quality sleep. So the whole idea is that they are kind of compressing the amount of sleep that you need and making it higher quality sleep. And I certainly feel like they're doing that.
Switch things up a little bit. Bill, where are you looking opportunity-wise to make money in the coming years?
Stocks? It's a great question. You know, I made most of my money in air conditioning companies, so I'm going to be focused on that. And then I'm invested in stocks. Bitcoin, I think if that goes down, you know, I'll be buying a lot. But yeah.
Any other business ventures you got in the...
No, giving away money is expensive, though. So I need to start, making more money. But, you know, I'm blessed, so... I'm going to keep giving away.
Cool. You're doing a great job.
Thank you.
How much have you given away total so far?
You know, I've given away at least like 1.08 million, but when you combine fees, expenses, legal fees, all that, I'm north of 2.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible.
But my published number's 1 million, but it's more than that.
How do you think about like measuring how many people you've impacted or helped?
I mean, definitely the numbers in the tens of thousands, you know, and then you get into the ripple effects and those type of things. Yeah. But I mean, we've helped thousands and thousands of people directly. But for me, it's more about a movement. It's more about inspiring a movement. It's more about having other people help other people. Because to me, Twitter philanthropy will never be successful until, frankly, I can get it to exist without me. There you go. I was wondering the other day.
You thought I didn't have this. Yeah. Look at this.
Yeah, but have you ever worn it?
Yes. Yes, actually, I have.
If you haven't, then I was going to give it to Joe or John.
look at this.
Yeah.
For those that don't know,
he's worn it.
That jacket's badass.
Bill gave this to me last time he came. This is a great jacket. Can people buy this?
Not yet. No. Nah. You'd be surprised how many people notice you once you, like oh, I've heard of that.
Yeah, see, pretty like cool. Right here, me and my friend Twitter Philanthropy.
I like the flag on the side of the sleeve.
Yeah.
Reiterating our point that we're not moving.
did you guys see how I put it like over here so that it's like me and my friend?
Yeah, cool. Yeah, I don't think you should touch that because it's there's not a Puerto Rico flag on the side.
Bro,
no, he's El Salvador. He's
El Salvador.
Foreign agents.
Listen,
I feel like I'm going to get stolen money from me on my way to the parking lot.
Do you understand that Puerto Rico is part of America?
Yeah.
Okay. That's all I wanted to hear from you.
How do you like your Tesla?
I like it. Me it's too. Nice. Yeah.
Would you buy it again or would you buy something?
Yeah, it's a computer on wheels.
Yeah, just, I agree.
I feel like I'm in the future.
I let a buddy drive my Tesla And he took down the safety score by like 30 or whatever.
Oh, there's a safety score.
You didn't know that?
Yeah, how does that work? I don't need to go check.
It's like, it's you're actually probably pretty good. I mean, to be honest. Yeah, just hit safety score in the app. Yeah. And so I was like, you know, I was like at like 94, 95, which I guess is pretty good, you know, to get like the full self-driving thing, you have to be like 98, 99.
Ooh, so you can't even get it.
But I gave it to a buddy and he got me down into like, I don't even know how, like into like the 40s or 50s or 60s or something.
How
like
was
that.
He doing?
And I've been climbing back and I think I'm like in the 80s now, but I was so pissed.
Oh my gosh. Where is it? In the app?
In the app, yeah. When was the last time you downloaded the app?
I got the app.
If you show me it, I'll do it for you later.
All right. Well, it does say software update. That shows you how much pay attention. Also, for the record, the Tesla has a name on it.
Yeah, what's yours?
I don't want to say it because it would be embarrassing for some other people, Polina. But it says Polina's Tesla, and I keep saying to her, at what point did you steal the car? And she's like, well, you know, like nobody else has my name, you know, like it's like easy to find or whatever. I was like, there's not that many Anthonys in the world either. When
does
you're
she
like,
drive it?
Walking. oh man, Bill, you're going to get me in trouble.
She just had a kid. She doesn't focus on the show anymore.
The best way to describe Polina
got bigger priorities
in
the
car is Polina drove the car one time. And I feel bad telling this story because she's not here to defend herself. But she came back and she said, oh, the car is much wider than I thought. And I was like, what? And she's like, yeah, I hit the curb. So I was like, all right. So I went out to the car. We were going somewhere. And I noticed on the front left tire or on like the wheel well.
Yeah.
I noticed that there was like some yellow paint. So I wanted to just like take it off, whatever. And I was like, okay. And then I get in the car and she was getting in the car too. I was like, yeah, I was like, in the front left tire. She goes, oh, no, that's not the thing I was saying. I was like, what do you mean? And she was like, when I hit the curb that I told you about, that was on the back right tire.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, what happened here? She's like, oh, that was a different thing. And I was like, all right, so we're going to have to go back to, maybe I'll do the drive-in and she can, you know, control the radio, the AC, like.
How's she doing? Good?
I'm real chill with everything else in the car. Just, you know, maybe the driving I'll take.
Tell her I said hi.
I will. She's doing great. The two new uncles over here are fan favorites.
Funkles. Mm.
Funkles. Except for you want to know what they refuse to do?
No.
Change diapers?
That's inappropriate.
And, yeah.
Gotta get ready.
It's your kid.
Yeah.
You know, when we went to lunch last time, I didn't know she was pregnant. She was pretty far along though.
Yeah.
And I like didn't want to bring it up. You know?
Do you want to know?
Like, we were walking on the way back, and she was like grabbing her stomach, you know, like a pregnant lady does. And
do you want to know?
I was like, oh man, that's the worst thing I could do.
No, the number one thing that's weird is, and Plino kept bringing this up to me, which I don't know if this was just a one-off thing or if this is a normal thing. But when she was pregnant, the only people that would say anything that would be like congratulations or like random strangers, like we get an elevator or whatever, always dudes. A woman, I can't remember a single time a woman ever said to her, like, Jeremo, congratulations.
Yeah.
But like, you know, and I don't know how, they're probably just trying to be polite or, you know, whatever. Yeah. But I was like, man, I am deathly afraid. If you said that and the person wasn't pregnant, like that is not politically acceptable. So I don't know. It's fine. All right. We're running out of time. You two got anything else?
No. Appreciate you for coming
Pulte.org/ebook. Ebook.
Help yourself.
That Bill Pulte built. They can download it right from there.
Yeah. All right. Complimentary.
Pulte.org/ebook. Very important is that this book is available, but it has a price tag of $0.
Yeah. It's
completely for free. Anyone who wants to go get it can go there. Man, I don't know if we got anything else. I feel like today was a good day. I appreciate everyone tuning in.
Thanks, guys.